Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Tata Steel Limited conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal for an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Swamita Shah. Thank you and over to you, ma'am.
Yeah, thank you, Zain. Good morning, good afternoon and good evening to all of you joining us today. I'm Swamita Shah and on behalf of Tata Steel, I'm delighted to welcome you all to this call to discuss our results for Q1 FY22, which were published yesterday. Firstly, my apologies for the issue many of you faced this morning. There were some technical glitches and I know many of you could not connect, so we thought it better to reschedule to this afternoon. Sincere apologies for all the inconvenience caused to you. Let's get started now. We have with us Mr. T.V. Narendran, CEO and Managing Director, Tata Steel, and Mr. Kaushik Chatterjee, Executive Director and CFO, Tata Steel. After a few opening remarks, we will move into Q&A, where we will take your questions. And as before, if you have any questions on Tata Steel BSL and Tata Steel Long Products, we will be happy to answer them as well. I have to remind you that the entire discussion today will be covered by the Safe Harbor Clause, which is on the results presentation uploaded on our website. That will cover the entire discussion today. Thank you, and over to you, Narendran.
Thanks, Swamita. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of you. Over the last 15 months, the global economy has been recovering, driven by policy support and progressive vaccination, which has led to improvement in business and customer confidence. However, Indian markets were adversely impacted again during the last quarter due to the second wave of COVID-19. And in these difficult times, we were working to minimize the impact on our employees, communities, and customers. As of 31st July, we've supplied over 68,600 tons of liquid oxygen to different parts of India. And we continue to support communities across our operating locations by providing medical facilities, meals, counseling, etc. Now, over 90% of our eligible employees across locations have taken at least one dose of vaccination. As far as industry is concerned, the Western market steel prices remain robust, with supplies lagging demand recovery, further supported by increasing production cost and a recent spike in raw material prices. Iron ore has actually moved up by about $50 in Q1, of course, over the last few weeks it's softened again. And hard coking coal prices jumped by about $80 during the last quarter and still stays quite strong. Moving to China, the Chinese government is focusing to control commodity price speculation. However, steel mills are facing margin pressure with higher input costs and are less likely to reduce prices because, for instance, the coking coal prices in China are much higher than it is in the rest of the world and rose by more than $100 per ton since the end of the quarter, to reach $325 in August as China stopped buying from Australia, as you're aware. At the same time, the Chinese government is taking steps to limit steel production and discourage exports with increased focus on pollution control. Recently, it has again raised export tariffs for pig iron and ferrochrome while removing export tax rebates for various steel products. In this scenario, we expect the regional prices to remain at elevated levels for longer. These are structural positives for the steel sector. During the first quarter, Indian steel demand shrank by about 14.8% quarter on quarter due to seasonality and temporary weakness in various steel consuming sectors with local lockdowns amidst the second wave of COVID-19. While the domestic steel prices have softened a bit during July, demand is recovering again as has prices. Currently, steel prices are still at a large discount to import parity prices. It's about 20% less than import parity prices. And this, we believe, should support domestic prices. A third wave of COVID-19 and a potential tapering of liquidity support amidst rising inflation remain the key risks. As far as our performance this quarter is concerned, during the quarter, Tata Steel India's crude steel production declined by 2.6% quarter on quarter to 4.63 million tons with the supply of liquid medical oxygen to different states. Our steel deliveries declined 11% quarter on quarter to 4.15 million tons due to partial lockdowns and temporary shutdowns in various steel consuming sectors. We increased exports to 16% of our total sales to counter the softness in the domestic markets. We continue to focus on our objective to attain and retain market leadership in chosen segments by focusing on building strong customer relationships, superior distribution network, rolling out brands and new product development, and we've developed 24 new products in India for customers across segments including automotive and branded products and retail. Few of them are included in our investor presentation. We've also focused on value-accretive growth to drive market share in chosen segments. We are expecting to add about 1 million tons this year in India in terms of steel volume through debottlenecking and capacity ramp-up across various sites. Our 5 million ton Kalinganagar phase 2 expansion is focused on product mix enrichment and increase in competitive edge and cost savings. It will enhance the capability to produce high-strength steel and advanced high-strength steel up to 1180 MPa, a new product for automotive, construction, and other domestic B2B customers. Our 6 million ton pellet plant and 2.2 million ton cold rolling mill complex are expected to be commissioned in the first half of 2022. We are making good progress on our various initiatives to de-risk the business. We launched the first in India's first shredded ferro scrap product, Tata Ferro Shred, which will help to substitute high quality shredded scrap imports. We have also developed and supplied 5 new products under our new materials business initiative. In Europe, economic activities in steel-consuming sectors, especially automotive, continue to recover. Our steel production in Europe remains stable, and steel sales volume declined about 6% quarter-on-quarter to 2.33 million tons in June 21, but the product mix improved. The spot hot-rolled coil gross spread further improved during the quarter with higher steel prices, which has started translating into the profitability of the steel mills. The European Commission has recently unveiled its Fit for 55 package to cut GHG emissions with carbon border adjustment mechanisms as a center piece. While this is still at an early stage, but a well-designed carbon border adjustment mechanism should ensure a level playing field in Europe, allowing Tata Steel to continue to compete, serve customers, and support the transition to a net zero steel producer. In this March, we received shareholders' approval to go ahead with the merger of Tata Steel BSL with Tata Steel. We filed a joint scheme petition with the NCLT to sanction the merger scheme with effect from 1st April 2019, and this is under consideration by the NCLT. I will now hand it over to Kaushik to comment on our financial performance.
Thank you, Naren, and good morning, good afternoon to all of you. Hope you and your loved ones are safe and well, and all of you are getting vaccinated, because it's important for us globally to get vaccinated as soon as possible. Turning to our performance, continuing with our strong performance in the fourth quarter of the last financial year, despite the second wave of the pandemic in India and disruption caused by the human suffering, our consolidated financial performance for the quarter was exceptionally strong on the back of strong underlying business performance and robust market conditions. Our consolidated revenue increased during the quarter by 7% quarter-on-quarter, and more than double on a year-on-year basis to 53,372 crores. We have again delivered strong financial performance this quarter by achieving a new highest ever quarterly consolidated EBITDA of 16,185 crores, which reflects essentially a 30% margin. Consolidated profit after tax stood at 9,768 crores, which is higher than the full year PAT of the previous financial year. Our India operations, which includes the standalone Tata Steel, Tata Steel BSL, and Tata Steel Long Products, generated revenues of about 30,344 crores, supported by higher steel prices and stable operations. We achieved highest ever quarterly EBITDA of about 13,946 crores this quarter. Tata Steel standalone revenues were marginally lower at 20,798 crores, as the benefit of the strong steel prices were offset by lower deliveries. Naren has explained on the deliveries front. Tata Steel standalone also achieved highest ever quarterly EBITDA of 10,274 with a 12% quarter-on-quarter growth. The operation generated free cash flow of more than 4,700 crores in the first quarter of this financial year. Our key subsidiaries, Tata Steel BSL, Tata Steel Long Products, continues to deliver strong operating performance. Tata Steel BSL generated an EBITDA of 3,118 crores, while Tata Steel Long Products generated an EBITDA of 554 crores. Both entities generated free cash flow of more than 2,700 crores and 450 crores respectively. As part of the overall deleveraging program, both companies have utilized the free cash flows to reduce debt. Both Tata Steel BSL and Tata Steel Long Products are close to being net debt-free individually. Moving to Europe, our revenues improved to 1.9 billion pounds during the quarter, with the increase in market prices starting to translate into the profit and loss account. Reported EBITDA for the quarter improved by 19% quarter-on-quarter with higher steel prices and better mix, partially offset by increased input costs as iron ore costs have started to increase. The reported EBITDA is after a one-off expense of about $14 million related to the sale of CO2 emission rights sold earlier in the first quarter of last year. With the continued elevated steel prices and with lagged effect of spreads, we are seeing our European spreads widen materially in the second quarter, which would mean much higher profitability than past trends, even though coal prices have moved up recently. We continue to prioritize on CapEx spend on ongoing projects, especially in the expansion of Kalinganagar and strategically essential investments. On consolidated basis, we spend about 2,000 crores of CapEx during this quarter, which includes our accelerated CapEx for Kalinganagar. As mentioned in my earlier call, our FY22 consolidated CapEx is expected to be about 10,000 to 12,000 crores. Despite the increase in working capital due to higher value of inventory and debtors for similar number of holding days, the company generated consolidated free cash flow of over 3,500 crores during this quarter. Besides CapEx, other key outflows in the quarter includes 1,100 crores for interest, which is now trending down due to the massive deleveraging that we have done, and we would see more reduction going forward. We now have a marginal tax regime and have paid about 958 crores for taxes. We will continue to deleverage in the coming quarters, and we expect to bring down the debt further by the end of the current financial year. We made debt repayments of 5,894 crores this quarter. Our gross debt has decreased to about 84,237 crores, while the net debt has come down to 73,973 crores. Our credit metrics have improved significantly, with net debt to equity now remaining under 1x and the improvement in net debt to EBITDA to 1.59x, which is now under the 2x trend line which we have talked about earlier. Our group liquidity position remains strong at 20,695 crores, including about 10,264 crores of cash and cash equivalent. With this, I'll end my comments here and open the floor for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handset while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask a question, please press star and one. The first question is from the line of Indrajit from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. Two questions from my side. First, on the working capital increase of about 8,200 crores, can you throw some more light on that? What are the different heads? How much will be inventory, and if there is any pending carbon cost related payout for the last quarter which we have done this year, and how do we see this trending in the next three quarters of this year?
So, Indrajit, I think a large part of the inventory has happened due to the not the quantity but more on the value part of it. So we clearly have seen that in India, the inventory increase as far as the quantity is concerned has been there. But most part of it is on account of TSE, where the inventory value is almost about 2,000 crores, which has increased between the two quarters. So I think that is an important part. So total increase is about 6,500 crores, of which 4,000 odd crores is in Europe, and 2,500 crores is in India. The inventory doesn't have any relation to carbon. I think it's more about the holding days, which is what we track very clearly, because the physical quantity determines the efficiency, whereas the value, which is somewhat out of our control is determined by the price in the market. So I think largely the Indian inventory, as I mentioned to you, 2,600 crores and 4,600 crores is in Europe.
Just to supplement what Kaushik said, the inventory buildup in India was also partly because of the local lockdowns, and we expect to unwind that increase in inventory during this quarter.
Sure. And this will be a combination of both finished goods and raw materials.
Correct.
Yes, that's
okay. And so my second question is on your... On Europe cost...
To explain...
Yeah. Sorry.
Sorry, Indrajit. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No, sorry. No, sorry, sorry, sorry. You're right.
No, I was just saying that the in raw materials, it has actually trended down. In finished goods, it's been higher. And that's the mix between the two. In tonnage terms, for example, in raw materials, we have been able to reduce more than a million tons in our inventory, and the value effect has also come down. Whereas, and I'm talking consolidated, and but in finished goods, I think the value of the price of the product is something which has resulted in the value increase significantly.
Sure, that is helpful. Second, on Europe costs, the other expenses in Europe has gone up from about 5,500 crores to 6,000 crores. So what could have driven this and how do we see this trending? And also on raw material, in last quarter numbers, what kind of iron ore and coking coal prices would we have booked in Europe?
Then you will take the second part.
Yeah, I'll take the second part. I think as far as Europe is concerned, let me put it differently. From last quarter to this quarter, the coking coal prices at a purchase level will go up by about $30 and at a consumption level, maybe about $20, both in Europe and in India. So that'll be the quarter on quarter impact of the rising coal prices. Iron ore will be about, not much impact in India, obviously, because we hardly buy any iron ore, but in Europe will be about $10 impact quarter on quarter. Kaushik, you want to answer the first one?
Yeah, so you wanted to know about the other expenses in total, right?
No, in Europe. In Europe, in the presentation you have mentioned, it has gone up from 5,500 crore to 6,000.
Let me come back to you. I'll come back to you.
Okay, and one last question, if I may. While we have seen significant interest cost reduction both in Bhushan and standalone, the same is not yet reflecting in the console numbers, in the P&L. So when can we see that effect in P&L in console?
So actually, in standalone, Bhushan, LP, all have gone down. In Europe, we have this year, this quarter, prepaid about €500 million of debt. And because we have short closed, there was a one-time cost on account of that. So it is because of that we had, you don't see a material movement in the consolidated. It will happen in the next three quarters because we are taking out significant debt outside of India now, paying back in Singapore as well as in Europe. And therefore you will see the consolidated numbers. In fact, on a full year basis, it will be materially lower than the previous year.
Thank you so much. I have more questions. I'll join back.
Thank you very much. Next question is from the line of Pinakin from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. I have three quick questions. My first is on Europe. If you look at the spot European HRC prices between the June quarter between the September quarter last year and June quarter of this year, HRC prices are broadly up just over $900 a ton. And against this, Tata Steel Europe's implied ASP per ton is up just over $300 a ton. Again, these are not apples to apples comparison, but there seems to be a material lag. At this point of time, starting from 2Q, what percentage of the sales portfolio would reflect steel prices which were prevailing in the June quarter, and how much would still be on older steel prices?
So Pinakin, there are two, three points I want to make, right? Firstly, the spot prices which get reported are spot prices, you know, and oftentimes not much volumes are transacted at those prices because typically a lot of the European contracts are a little bit longer tenured than the spot prices, right? That is one. Second point is it's not just a tenure, it also depends on the timing of the contracts. For instance, we had a lot of contracts which were negotiated in November, December last year, and hence we had contracts from 1st January. And we had a lot of contracts which have come up on 1st July, which is this quarter. So you will see the benefits of the higher prices in Europe flowing through from this quarter. So if I were to give you a guidance, let's say this quarter, we expect the impact to be at least 200-250 euros a ton in Europe, okay, of improving prices compared to the previous quarter.
Understood. So just to, you know, understand more clearly is that given the lag, it also means that we will continue to see upward trending ASPs per ton in Tata Europe over the September, December, and possibly potentially even the March quarter, right? Because of the lag repricing of the contracts?
Yeah. As the mix changes, so there are two impacts, right? One is the increase because you contracted at a higher price. And two is as you bill out some of the older contracts and the newer contracts are a bigger part of the mix, you will see the mix impact. So that's why we are forecasting a very strong Q2, Q3, Q4 from that perspective in Europe. What we are watchful of is raw material prices, which from a Europe point of view is good news when the iron ore prices drop.
Thank you. Just two more questions. First is, sir, how do you see the India ASPs per ton over the September quarter? Because in India also, there is an auto contract volume. And secondly, on working capital, while we will see some release in India, is it fair to say that the 80 billion, 8,000 crore plus working capital build that we saw in the June quarter, at best over the next two to three quarters, should be a neutral number? Because ultimately, that is what will, if it's not working capital build, it will go towards paying down debt.
Yeah. So as far as India is concerned, we expect this quarter the realizations to be about 3,000 rupees higher than last quarter, largely because of auto contracts, also because export prices are better in this quarter than the last quarter because export prices hit the bottom line with a few months lag, right? I mean, you book an order today, you ship it after two, three months, you know? So from that point of view, you'll see the better prices playing out this quarter. We will have more volumes and a better mix of downstream. So for these reasons, we see a 3,000 rupee improvement in prices this quarter in India compared to the previous quarter. What is going to be soft and that has been factored in the 3,000 is the long product prices this quarter will be lower than last quarter. But overall, because we are more flats oriented and because of all that I've said, and longs also, particularly for Tata Steel long products, there are auto contracts where the higher prices will kick in this quarter. So overall, 3,000 rupees is the guidance for this quarter. And as far as working capital is concerned, we expect to sell more volumes in this quarter than we did last quarter. And that's because, particularly in India, we'll be unwinding the finished goods that was built up. And also, market conditions are stronger in some sense, trending more stable to upwards in India. And export markets continue to be strong. And we are exporting, we are expecting to export about 20% of what we produce this quarter. So that should help bring down the inventory. But the more specific point that you asked, yes, inventory buildup, I think, or rather the working capital buildup to that extent seems to have peaked. And if raw material prices drop, then Europe has greater opportunity to release more working capital from that point of view also.
Understood, sir. This is very helpful. Thank you.
Add to, if I can just add to Naren's point, I think given the steep increases that we are seeing in the second quarter spread, there would be pressure on working capital, but we see the third and fourth quarter to be the ones where we'll start releasing that.
Understood, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If I can just also answer the variation that you'd asked for in other expenses, essentially it is in the maintenance cost in Europe, apart from rent and higher rates, which accounted for almost about 450 crores, the gap that you are seeing, 6,000 crores and 5,500 crores.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Satyadeep Jain from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead. Mr. Satyadeep Jain, your line is unmuted. You may go ahead with your question.
Hi, sorry. Thank you for the opportunity. Couple of questions. One would be a follow-up to Pinakin's question. The other steel companies have, some of the peers have reported a higher Q-on-Q increase in realization. Is there, can you talk about your Tata Steel Europe's product mix, especially are there any specific products which have longer fixed contract duration? Is it packaging or more auto compared to others? I just want to understand that late cycle or higher fixed cost exposure to Tata Steel Europe versus some of the other peers. That would be my first question.
Yeah. So, Satyajit, we have the auto contracts and the packaging contracts are the longer tenure contracts. And I think they account for about 50 to 60% of our mix, right? But like I said, they are not everything starting at the same point in time. They may be starting at different points in time. And so, for instance, we had a lot of auto contracts due from 1st July, which has got renegotiated at the new prices, right? So, so it depends on when the new contracts kick in. And so those tenures may vary across suppliers. Secondly, some of our peers, if you really look at it, there is also other income in that, non-steel income. So I think you should also normalize that and then compare the price increases. Yes, we are lagging a bit, but you will see that in this quarter, we will more than make up for that.
Okay, thank you. So the other question would be, some of the peers in Europe are also taking the opportunity to realign their blast furnaces because they've been, all the plants have been running at 100% utilization for a while now. Do you see something like maybe a maintenance period for Netherlands or for UK also in this year or in upcoming future?
No major work apart from the regular stuff, and we took some shutdowns in April, which was to some extent the reason why the maintenance costs went up, as Kaushik mentioned. Also, that's also why the production was a bit lower than the previous quarter in because of those shutdowns. But no major work which involves many days of shutdown planned in both Netherlands and UK for the rest of the year.
Just if I can squeeze one more. On carbon, I understood, I think there was a liability towards the end of the year and it needed to be settled by April for the shortfall that was there in FY21. Was that the case? Was there a payment in April towards that? And the company is also levying a carbon surcharge. Is that surcharge in all products? And given some of the peers are not levying a carbon surcharge, is there a longevity to that surcharge if the other, if your peers are not going to levy it anytime soon?
So I'll answer the second part and let Kaushik answer the first part. You know, the surcharge is basically calculated based on the difference between the allowances that we get and the cost that we incur. And that is the surcharge that we have added to our price. So far, customers have accepted it. Our peers are also following it in some sense, whether they call it a surcharge or not. And but the larger point is, I think any carbon cost in Europe is applicable to everyone. And so in some sense, that's a cost being added to all producers. And to ensure that the producers in Europe are not disadvantaged because of that additional cost, you have the proposed carbon border adjustment mechanism so that there is a level playing field and there is no carbon leakage, so to say. So I think while there are additional costs in Europe because of this, but in some sense that is reflecting in the higher spreads that we believe you will see in Europe compared to other geographies because of these structures. Kaushik, you can address the CO2, more specific question on CO2 payments.
Yeah, so so the amount that was expected to be settled has been done in April itself, and it was around 227 million pounds. So that's been settled and done.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Before we move to the next question, we would like to inform participants to limit their questions to two per participant. Time permitting, you may return to the queue for your follow-up questions. The next question is from the line of Saumil Mehta from Kotak Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Congrats on a great India performance. I have two questions on Europe. One is, you know, is it possible to give a broad breakup as to what are the long and short-term contracts? And by long, is mainly what percentage would be the annual contracts for us, if any?
Yeah, I think I will just give me a minute. I think I answered the question differently, but more specifically, I think it's about 60 to 70% would be the, you know, what would be a 6 month and above kind of contracts.
Okay, okay. 60 to 70%.
Yeah, but like I said, they are not all starting at the same time. So, yeah, yeah. Samita, you want to say something?
No, I think that's the number is broadly in that list.
Yeah, and my second question is, you know, when you say that obviously there is a lag impact and you will see a positive traction, maybe about 200 to 250 euros at least this quarter, can we see a similar number in the subsequent quarter because steel price has been up about $900, I understand. It's not a spot-to-spot basis, but the realization up is only about $300. So a large part of the lag will come in Q2, but even Q3 can have a similar pricing increase based on whatever price action we've seen as of now.
Yeah, the only point is long-term contract prices will not reflect spot prices. You know, not just for us, for anybody else. Because like I said, if the market consumes 150 million tons of steel in a year, spot will be a very small percentage of that, right? So so to me, there will always be a difference between the spot that you keep seeing on a daily basis with the contracted prices. So I think what you should look at is the realizations that steel companies announce vis-a-vis the spot, and that will be the difference which is there. And if you see a difference between Tata Steel and the rest, what we're saying is we will bridge that gap. Because there is a lag effect.
Definitely. And in terms of the flexibility of the contracts, how flexible they are in terms of any price revision or, you know, escalation, if any, or these are facultative?
So normally it's not so much an escalation clause, but if the changes are very significant, then there's always on a good spirit basis a discussion between the customer and the supplier. It works both ways. When steel prices drop very steeply, also there is a conversation at times. And similarly, as has happened now, when it increases steeply, also there is a conversation which happens. So that is what is getting reflected. Apart from the new contracts that have been negotiated from this quarter, you'll see those prices.
Sure. And my final question is, when I see about the steel prices, I think well, last time around was maybe somewhere in 2007, 2008, these kind of prices. While I understand companies are a lot different, but at that time, the profitability was very different from what you are. I assume in the last 10 years, there have been significant cost efficiency. Product mix have actually improved. We have cut down on long products. So is it possible to see a few quarters of similar profitability, what we saw in 2008 or so, or that would be a tall ask at this point in time?
I think there are a couple of things which are different, right? I mean, yes, there is a lot more efficiency today than there was 10 years back, right? So that is very clear. Secondly, you know, what is also happening now is nobody is adding capacity as feverishly as they were at that point in time. China was adding 40, 50 million tons a year at that point in time, right? So nobody is adding capacity significantly apart from in India, right? So the supply side is far more disciplined than it was 10 years back. So I think both these suggest that this will be structurally a different kind of few quarters, few years maybe. I'm not saying that today's price will be there for the next few years, but all I'm saying is spreads and profitability for steel companies will be different. In many ways, profitability of steel companies outside China were determined by the profitability of steel industry in China, which was very poor, even in the best of times. The EBITDA margins were 5-10%, right? And since they were exporting at those prices, the EBITDA margins for globally, the steel industry also suffered. So that is changing. As China is exporting less, there's more discipline in the market, and steel companies are making the profits that they should be making to give the return on the capital that they've invested in.
Sure. Thank you so much, and all the best.
Thank you very much. Next question is from the line of Vineet Malu from Aditya Birla Sun Life Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I just want to understand, remarked in between somebody's question that the spot prices may not be truly representative because very less volume gets transacted at those levels. Right? While I understand the timing differences because of contracts, etc., my question is, does it mean that, whatever the spot might be suggesting, it's not that eventually we'll realize those numbers in some form or the other. Is that what it means?
No, basically it means that maybe 10, 15, 20% of the business will be transacted at those prices, right? So it, 100% of the business will not get transacted at those prices because typically who buys spot? Somebody who's a pipe manufacturer or somebody who's a commercial grade tube, steel buyer, who's buying spot? Most auto companies or packaging companies or anybody who buys steel of a certain, quality from a certain supplier with a certain relationship will contract at least 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, whatever, right? So the spot prices are more reflecting shortages, people who've not covered their volumes and are hence buying in the market. Tata Steel exports, which it does, to Europe, we get something close to the spot price, but that's 30,000 tons or 50,000 tons, and in a market which consumes maybe 12 million a month, right? So, or 15 million a month. So that's the difference between spot and transacted prices. So that's why even if you look at other steel companies, you will see that the realizations are obviously lower than the spot. They may be higher than, as you are saying, Tata Steel, but they are still lower than spot because that difference will always be there. Which is true in India as well, right? If you see auto contracts in India, while the auto companies, they say the auto prices are high, it is still lower than the spot prices. But normally these contracted volumes or contracted tonnages help in a more in a down market than in a up market.
So just to clarify once again, I'm sorry to belabor this point. Is it then fair to say that none of the contract prices are indexed to any form of average or spot? They are independently negotiated. Is that how we should understand it?
They are negotiated, but obviously the spot prices is a very important part of the negotiation, right? So when you go to that customer, you will say that the spot price is this. So, so that will, that's an important part of the conversation.
Okay. So I just want to, even within India, we've seen something similar this time round, which is that, our realizations have sort of kind of lagged in terms of delta versus peers. And so has profitability in terms of delta. And
by
the fact that, we would have had advantage of integration and others wouldn't. So just wondering, why should that be so?
Why do you say profitability is lagged?
The delta. If you look at quarter and quarter delta, it is virtually same as some of our peers. Whereas I presume we should have actually got advantage because we are more integrated than others.
No, you're talking two things, right? One is price. Price is a function of the product mix. Who is how much in flat? How much of downstream is part of that mix? Like for instance, in Tata Steel packaging, tinplate is a separate company. So depends on the mix, depends on whether you're flat products or long products, depends on many things. So I think we should look at it at an elemental level, and we're happy to answer a more specific question at on apples to apples basis. In terms of if I were to look at profitability, I would compare a Tata Steel BSL with a JSW because Tata Steel BSL is not integrated. They get raw materials either from the market or from Tata Steel at transfer prices which are determined by market. So that would be a good reference of profitability in that sense of the term. And I think our numbers have been pretty strong. But if it's something more specific, I'm happy to answer.
Okay. Maybe I'll come back directly to IR team with more specific numbers and so to understand this better.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Ashish Jain from Macquarie. Please go ahead. Mr. Ashish Jain, your line is unmuted. You may go ahead with the question.
Hello. Hi, sir. Good afternoon. Sir, first, I just wanted one clarification. This 200 euro number that you said, potential improvement in realization 2Q, this is on the overall volumes or this is on the volume that may have gotten renegotiated for July quarter?
Overall volumes.
Overall. And so secondly, you know, the in European business, can you just help me identify the one-off costs which are there, including you know, including carbon, and if there's anything else as a one-off cost there?
Okay.
Yeah. So the I mentioned that the one-off cost was essentially 14 million, which was one-off. Other than that, there are regular costs which, for example, reflects the increase in the increments of employees, which was reflected in the Q1, which will essentially flow through in the Q2, Q3, Q4, because that's the new increment of employee costs. But other than that, the one-off cost is more around 14 million in Europe. I'm saying 14 million pounds, that's about 140 crores.
Okay, okay. Got it, sir. That's it for my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Bhavin Chheda from Enam Holdings. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon, sir. Sir, I missed out on the number of iron ore and coking coal increase, if any, you guided for quarter two. I believe you gave quarter one number. It was $10 higher iron ore and $20 on coking coal. Any quarter two guidance there?
No, that was a quarter two guidance. What I said is quarter two, we are buying coking coal both in Europe and India at about $30 per ton higher than quarter one. Consumption will flow through at about $20 in both Europe and India.
Quarter two is going up 30 over quarter one. Already you saw a $20 increase in quarter one.
No, no. I'm saying quarter two compared to quarter one. Quarter one compared to quarter four, I'm not remembering the numbers. I'm talking of the quarter which we've reported to the quarter which we are in just now. Right? And I know it is about $10 in Europe, basically. Sure. In Q2, the cost will be higher than Q1 by about $10.
Sure. And so the carbon credit, the amount which was given, which is paid in the month of April, so this is a direct balance sheet entry, right? It's not passed via income statement in the quarterly results, right? And it is captured in the working capital change, right? Euro 227 million pounds?
It is the part of the cash flows, yes. It is not a P&L item.
It's not a P&L item. Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Mitra from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Just to get a sense of the volume outlook for the full year, and you know, just to understand the impact of you know, mix on account of any shift in auto volumes, does that pose a risk to the guidance of increase in realizations that you have given for India as well as Europe? Thanks.
So I think on volume guidance, we stand by what we gave at the beginning of the year. I think we said we'll do close to 1 million tons more in India compared to last year. And in Europe also, it was close to 1 million tons is what we had guided. We stand by that. Secondly, as far as auto is concerned, we are seeing a fairly strong recovery, but that has no impact on our volume guidance. I don't think mix will play out that much because for a change, export prices are even higher than domestic prices. And given the speed at which spot prices have gone up, auto contracts, unless they catch up much more, particularly in India, are still, you know, lower than the spot prices. So even if auto takes less, I think we'll be able to sell to other segments at higher prices.
Thanks. That's all from my side.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Rahul Gupta from Fidelity. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I just wanted to dig a bit more deeper in this contract price discussion in Europe. I think you said that obviously spot prices are one of the important inputs that go into the discussions, but can you just help us understand better what are the other factors that go into those negotiations? I mean, do the customers look at something like a steel spread? Is that an important factor that goes into it? The reason I'm asking is that now that iron ore prices have started correcting, does that become an important factor as well? I mean, does that cap, let's say, the negotiations to a certain extent?
What happens typically in these segments is that you need to be an approved supplier, right? Always the options for a customer are limited to the three, four, or five, or six suppliers who are approved to supply, whether it's auto or packaging. To that extent, it is not a free-for-all kind of any, they can import steel from anywhere kind of conversation, right? That is why our steel companies deal with such segments, because it's less crowded than in the commodity space where anyone from anywhere in the world can supply. Secondly, now within that community, obviously you will look at getting the best out of the contract. Today, if you look at it in Europe, there is more demand than supply in some sense of the term. There is a pull. There is an issue with the auto industry because of the semiconductor shortage. Otherwise, broadly, the market is strong. European steel consumption is coming back to pre-pandemic levels. Import quotas are pretty much getting used up in the beginning of the quarter, and that anyway impacts only the mid and the bottom end of the segment. When you have a conversation with the customer, you will look at certainly, like I said, spot prices and tell the customer that this is the spot price and this is the option I have as a supplier if the customer is not willing to contract. Because as a supplier, we can always say, I will sell to the commodity space who maybe at that point in time is willing to pay more than an auto customer. I think these are the conversations that happen and this part of the negotiation. We also keep in mind long-term relationships because in a cyclical business, there would be times when you need the customer more than they need you, you need to remember that when it's the other way around.
Understood. That's very helpful. Just wanted to understand, is raw material cost or spreads are part of discussions, or that's not what clients generally go into because.
No, that's sure. Like, we will refer to spot prices. Customers will say, if iron ore prices drop, then iron ore prices drop. I think that's part of any commercial discussion where you will highlight what is in your favor and they will highlight what is in their favor.
Understood. Just one more question from my side again. It's more like a clarification. You said that Europe prices will go up by, let's say, 200-250 euros in next quarter. All the contracts, obviously the timelines for contract renegotiations are different, so there is further scope for improvement, let's say in 3Q and 4Q as more contracts get renegotiated. Is that right?
What I meant is on an overall basis, this will be the increase. There will be contracts where you may have negotiated a higher price. There may be contracts which are continuing from the previous quarter. The overall impact, and that was a question which somebody else had asked, when I say this is the improvement in spread and price, this is on an average for the overall volume.
That's for 2Q, right? I'm saying as more contracts come for renewal in 3Q, 4Q, there is scope for further improvement if, let's say, spot prices stay here.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Abhishek Poddar from HDFC Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Regarding the carbon emission allowances, I want to understand how would FY22 look like in terms of allowances versus our emissions?
Kaushik?
Yeah. The free allowances are based on expected production and the past averages and so on. All companies have some level of deficit or the other. And we have about 1 million tons of deficit in the UK and about 2 million tons in Netherlands. So that's already included. So that's it happens over 4 quarters. So for this quarter, it is already included in the numbers that you see. You will find a similar number in the second quarter and third quarter and going on. The key question remains the price at which it gets traded and which you have to buy. So this is broadly the equation as far as carbon allowances are concerned. Over time, these allowances will keep coming down, but that is after 2025. Till that time, they'll largely remain the same and the formulation remains the same. The in UK, the post-Brexit, the UK emission trading scheme has also got launched. It's not so liquid as yet, but that is the basis. If there is a certain correlation with the EU ETS scheme. And that's the way any operating company in Europe and UK would have to take care of the allowances. There is no other, this is the operating part of the carbon emission regime as far as the Europe is concerned.
And the surcharge fully covers the cost that we are incurring now?
So as of now, yes, but it depends on how it moves. We have also increased the surcharge in recent times. The question and the customer world is looking at it, and just now it's passing through. But effectively, there is a neutralizing mechanism that we are building in, which will at certain point in time be replaced by the carbon border adjustment mechanism, which is just now floated, which is not yet started and will not start very soon. But till that time, hopefully, we should be neutral on that on a net basis.
Just one more question on coking coal. You highlighted that the purchase cost has gone up by $30, while the spot market prices have almost gone up by $100. So how does the contract are structured and when do we see large impact on the cost?
So again, I think here the reverse is true. You know, where we are the customer, it's not that you are buying at spot prices, right? I mean, so you will just like on the other end, on the revenue side, you are some at a disadvantage because of some of these contracts. On the buying side, you are at an advantage because of some of these contracts. So we obviously will and try to buy at a discount to spot. And the smartness also lies in finding the right time to buy and the right volumes to buy. So when we guide this, it's not as if, you know, every quarter it has to, if you buy right, you know, the quarter-on-quarter impact can be minimized. So when you say $30 doesn't mean that the rest of the gap will get covered in the subsequent quarters. It's not necessary.
Okay. If I just add to what Naren mentioned, it's actually the index. And we've seen in the past our procurement colleagues have been smart enough to buy at better than the index, which is what should reflect in the P&L ultimately.
Right. So, sir, the reason I asked because 110 plus 30 means like 140 and 50, whereas the spot is 220. So the difference is close to 60-70. So that kind of efficiency we could have in procurement?
No, I don't think. Sorry, go ahead, Kaushik.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
No, so you're saying last, the quarter buying price, yeah. So, you know, when we look at the, what do you call it, the consumption cost, I mean, which we report every quarter, that will give you, so even if you see last quarters, when you say 110, right, the, I think coking coal price during that quarter was 150 or something, 150, 160, right? So it there will always be a gap. Like I said on the sell side, very little is really contracted at that spot price. That spot price is oftentimes an indicator of, you know, the trend, the sentiment, rather than the actual price at which all the buying and selling happens, you know. So the spot is a relevant input, but you don't cost it based on that, or you don't plan your revenue based on the spot price at both ends.
Spot influences the index, and that index is lagged to the spot. And if you are smart, then you can do many things which will be better than the index. So that's
the other thing to be kept in mind. Also, there are many blends in coal. So one of the other things is to find the right blend, make sure you're able to operate with what we call a lean blend, because coal is not just one homogeneous commodity. There are different blends. And so part of the operational excellence comes from being able to manage, you know, the best blend from a cost point of view, price point of view, supply point of view. And so some of those efficiencies come from that. It's not just about buying cheaper than market.
Okay, sir. Thanks a lot. All the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will take our last question now, which is from the line of Rashi Chopra from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Thank you. So I just wanted to check on realizations in India. You had mentioned that this quarter should be about 3,000 higher, but that's pretty much due to the export mix and downstream. And you'd also indicated that we discount import parity is around 20% right now. So when do you think prices start moving up? And, you know, is demand really the big constraint at this point in time, or have we started to see that get better?
So I want to make a few comments. One is, apart from export mix and auto contracts, on a flat products or hot rolled coil basis, we will see better prices this quarter than last quarter. I'm saying average of this quarter versus average of last quarter. Long products, as of now, is seeing lower average this quarter compared to last quarter, particularly for the reinforcing steel and products like that. The auto contracts and long products will be better this quarter than last quarter. But I think the sentiment has started changing again. It had softened in June and July. But if you see August, the prices, flat product prices have started going up. Long products also is much firmer than we would have expected during the monsoon months. So as the more sectors of the economy come back on stream over the next few months, we expect things to get better. And because if you want to import steel, it is not available at anywhere close to domestic prices, threat of imports is also not there. But we must keep in mind that India is exporting 1.5 million tons a month now. So as the Indian prices improve in the domestic market, Indian export, Indian producers are opting to sell more in the Indian.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Shah for closing comments. Over to you, ma'am.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this call, and I hope your questions were answered. If you need any specific inputs, we are, of course, available. Thank you, and stay safe. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Tata Steel Limited, that concludes today's conference call. Thank you all for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.